The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles initially from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and then probably from the Harvard Heart Letter. The first article comes from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of March 2024, and it's an interesting subject called When Your Illness is a Mystery, Being Your Own Best Advocate. When most people have medical concerns, a review of symptoms, a medical exam, and perhaps testing can lead to a diagnosis and treatment. But some people have symptoms, often nonspecific and prolonged, that are not so straightforward. In fact, millions of Americans live with what has been termed undiagnosed illness and medically unexplained symptoms, or their condition is categorized as a somatic symptom disorder. Common unexplained symptoms include fatigue, dizziness, weakness, racing or pounding heart, pain and abdominal and pelvic discomfort. Most people with this constellation of symptoms will have started their healthcare journey in the emergency department or with their primary care teams. Many will have been referred on to specialists. Labs, tests, maybe imaging and even diagnostic procedures will have been ordered, all of which fail to reveal an explanation. Medications and therapies have probably been tried. Some treatments may have eased symptoms, but others may have had no effect or made symptoms worse. While pieces and components of a problem may be revealed, most interactions with a care team will not land on an aha moment in which the cause of the symptoms is explained. Many people with undiagnosed illness have had discouraging or even traumatic experiences in the context of their health care. They may be dismissed or labeled difficult. They might have been told the symptoms are all in your head. With all the research and resources funneled into today's healthcare system, how is it possible that symptoms are unexplainable? Most likely, you have uncommon symptoms of a common illness, or you have a condition that is currently unknown. Regardless of why your health concern remains a mystery, you can still seek to improve your health. Doctors often note that some of their most resilient patients are the ones who tackle an unexplained illness with every option available, while continuing to search for new options. Reducing your symptom burden. Because undiagnosed conditions are poorly understood, it's not possible to know how to prevent them. This may be changing. Research on the links between acute COVID-19 infection and long-term fatigue, dizziness, and brain fog, common symptoms of long COVID, is helping experts make links to other disorders. It's possible that triggers for these symptoms will be identified and treatments developed. Some people are at higher risk of unexplained symptoms. Here are some risk factors and lifestyle approaches that may make symptoms less likely and reduce their burden on you. The first is manage stress. Higher stress can worsen almost all the common symptoms in undiagnosed illness. Recognizing and devising intentional plans for managing stress is beneficial. Common stress management approaches include relaxation, mindfulness, and guided imagery. A history of trauma increases the risk of developing unexplained symptoms. Strong associations exist with histories of sexual trauma and victimization. Having had difficult or challenging childhood events, such as having a parent who was ill, also increases your risk of developing a somatic disorder. In a somatic disorder, you think about your symptoms to a great extent, and you have a high level of health anxiety. Trained psychologists and other mental health personnel can assist with recognizing, facing, and releasing trauma. It's important to remember that neither the prior trauma nor the unexplained symptoms are your fault, and they don't represent a weakness. Having an undiagnosed illness can impact your relationships, especially when others don't understand how you're feeling or why you need to cancel plans when you're feeling worse. This can be especially difficult when your symptoms cause no visible problems, what some call an invisible illness. Do your best to communicate with important people in your life so they can understand what you're going through. A diet full of highly processed foods can be inflammatory, potentially worsening pain and fatigue. High-quality sleep allows the body and brain to heal. Many people with diagnosed conditions still have symptoms that are unrelated to their known diagnosis and remain unexplained. People with a history of heart attack can have subsequent non-cardiac chest pain. Those with a history of migraines may have unexplained episodic dizziness. Staying on track with recommended management for your known diagnosis is important when you also are managing undiagnosed symptoms. The broad range of symptoms in the undiagnosed illness make generalized treatment recommendations difficult. Ideally, you'll receive treatment from a multidisciplinary team. You might pursue symptom management through several methods. The first is cognitive behavioral therapy. This form of psychotherapy is focused on thought patterns and specific behaviors. CBT shows the best evidence for treating medically unexplained symptoms. CBT looks at the patterns and habits that trigger symptoms or cause them to persist. Along with a trained therapist or after reviewing educational material, you rewire your brain response to certain triggers. Antidepressants. It's common for people with undiagnosed illness to also have mood disorders like generalized anxiety, panic disorder, and major depression. Treating these disorders can help with other unexplained symptoms. In addition, medications that treat mood disorders like antidepressants also are effective in reducing pain symptoms in people with fibromyalgia and chronic pain syndrome. This is true even in people who don't have depression. A common approach to treating pain is to start narcotic or opioid medications. These powerful substances can lead to misuse and dependence. Long-term use can actually worsen pain and make it more difficult to treat. If you find yourself trapped with these drugs, consider working with a trained professional to help you reduce your dose or eliminate them. Comprehensive pain management programs are an effective way to approach this. When you don't feel well, you probably move less. When you move less, you feel worse. On and on, the cycle continues. It's important to incorporate regular movement practice in your life that is matched in intensity, duration, and frequency to your overall health status and goals. In other words, move however you can. A type of physical therapy called graded exercise therapy and low-impact activities like walking and water movement are good places to start. You should develop an active, trusting relationship with your healthcare team. Your care team is crucial in determining whether you will get healthier over time, but a lack of diagnosis and limited treatment options can cause strain. If you regularly leave appointments feeling that your symptoms are being dismissed, it might be time to see if you can find a different care team. Find someone with whom you can build a trusting relationship. Decide together how often to have visits, and set boundaries around the time spent and the number of concerns addressed at each session. While seeking treatment, it's also a good idea to seek quality information about your unexplained symptoms. Many academic medical centers have publicly available high-quality health information online, including www.mayoclinic.org. Another website focused on functional neurologic disorders is www.neurosymptoms.org. That's NeuroSymptoms, all one word. Online and virtual support groups exist. While these groups are a great way to feel less alone, they are not commonly moderated and may include incorrect information. Additionally, stories shared on these platforms and in blogs or personal channels represent individual experiences and should be considered as such. While you might glean helpful information, watch for advice that seems counterintuitive or has the potential for harm. For truly unusual cases, a network of medical experts has formed the Undiagnosed Diseases Network, found at undiagnosed.hms.harvard.edu. This network was formed to assess and catalog possible genetic patterns associated with disorders that have remained undiagnosed after traditional medical evaluation. To be considered by the Undiagnosed Diseases Network, your care team must submit a letter of application summarizing your condition, your evaluation, and attempts at treatment. Now, once again, turning to the Mayo Clinic health letter for March of 2024. Here's an article called Second Opinion. And the first question asked is, there's an irritated cyst on my back that doesn't seem to be improving. Is it okay to pop it myself? And the answer is, epidermoid cysts are bumps under the skin surface that are sometimes inflamed and painful. They form when skin cells shed and collect under the skin surface. As they grow, epidermoid cysts fill with keratin, a protein material. They can look red or dark, but these cysts are usually not infective. Do not attempt to squeeze the cyst or drain it on your own. The cyst can rupture and be harder to treat in the long term. Epidermoid cysts do not go away on their own, but they may become smaller over time, even without treatment. But if your cyst grows, ruptures, becomes painful, or appears infected, have it checked by your healthcare team. The most effective treatment for inflamed epidermoid cyst is to first allow the inflammation to calm down, and then remove the cyst wall and its contents. Surgical removal of an epidermoid cyst involves making an incision, then releasing the cyst and cyst wall from surrounding tissue. Your skin may then be stitched shut. A medical professional will first inject a local anesthetic to numb the area and make sure you are comfortable. The removed tissue might be sent to a lab to make sure it's not cancerous. After the procedure, you may have restrictions like avoiding strenuous activity until the stitches are removed or until the incision has healed. Surgical removal typically cures the cyst, but if the cyst ruptures or is drained without complete surgical removal, part of the cyst wall may remain, and the cyst may come back. As an alternative to surgical removal, injecting a steroid directly into the skin over the cyst can sometimes reduce inflammation and provide relief. Antibiotics usually aren't needed unless an active infection is confirmed. Very rarely, an incision and drainage may be performed to relieve pressure in the short term, but this will not remove the cyst wall. Question. I've always had dark circles under my eyes, but as I've aged, they're worse. Is there anything that can make them go away? At times when you've stayed up too late, you probably woke up with puffy, tired eyes. But sometimes dark circles stick around, even when you've slept well. And yes, under-eye circles usually do get more noticeable with age. Dark circles under the eyes can be a symptom of some autoimmune conditions, as well as allergies, so discuss with your healthcare team before addressing them as a purely cosmetic issue. Of course, being tired is a common cause of dark circles, so make sure you really are getting enough quality sleep. Insomnia and other sleep disorders are common, so if you feel tired in addition to looking tired, improve your sleep. That's a good place to start. Drinking alcohol and smoking both can make dark circles worse, so minimizing or eliminating both is an excellent next step. Some dark circles are caused by thin skin and tissue under the eyes, which makes dark blood vessels more visible. A good eye cream can help improve skin quality and moisturize the area, and a cool compress can shrink surrounding blood vessels, making your eyes appear more awake. In other cases, sagging or puffy skin casts shadows under the eyes. You might try elevating your head with an extra pillow at night and reducing your intake of salty foods to reduce fluid buildup. If dark circles are caused by excess pigment on the under-eye skin itself, some brightening eye creams can help. Look for active ingredients like kojic acid, K-O-J-I-C, or vitamin K. Protect your skin from the sun with a hat and wear broad-spectrum sunscreen to reduce pigment changes. If these strategies don't help and your under-eye circles bother you, a cosmetic dermatologist can discuss possible treatments. Options range from injectable fillers to eyelid surgery. Now we're going to go on to the Harvard Heart Letter. And this is the March 2024 issue. And the first article is entitled, "How Much Do You Sit, Stand, and Move Each Day? Swapping even just a few minutes of sitting with movement may lead to tangible improvements in heart health." Let's say you sleep about 8 hours a night. During the 16 hours you're awake, are you sitting for much of that time? If that's the case, you can improve your cardiovascular health by moving, or even simply standing more during the day. This advice is hardly new, as experts have been sounding the alarm about the health hazards of sedentary behavior for decades. Now a new study sheds light on how different types and amounts of activity may affect indicators of heart health, like body mass index, BMI, cholesterol values, and blood sugar levels. It's the first study to look at how different movement patterns over an entire 24-hour period may affect those factors, says Dr. Edward Phillips, associate professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School. That's important because whenever you make any type of lifestyle change, it's helpful to know not just what you're adding, but also what you're subtracting. For example, when people eat more fruit, they may eat fewer cookies, and both shifts are beneficial. People are better off when they move more and sit less. The new findings include estimates about the potential advantage of choosing different activities, including sleeping in place of sitting. Published online November 10, 2023 by the European Heart Journal, the article includes data from more than 15,000 people participating in 6 studies from 5 different countries. Their average age was 54, and nearly 55% were women. Most rated their health as good or better. Researchers assessed the participants' heart health based on their BMI, a measurement that incorporates both weight and height, waist circumference, cholesterol, and triglyceride levels, and the hemoglobin A1C, a measure of blood sugar used to assess diabetes risk. About a third were taking medications to control cholesterol, high blood pressure, or diabetes, and about 10% had been diagnosed with heart disease. Participants wore special activity monitors that attached to the front of the thigh. These monitors are more accurate than those worn on the hip or the wrist for discerning between sitting and standing. Based on a week's worth of data, the average participant's day consisted of 7.7 hours of sleeping, 10.4 hours of sitting, 3.1 hours of standing, 1.5 hours doing light physical activity, and 1.3 hours doing moderate to vigorous physical activity. Note that participants probably didn't do 1.3 hours of structured, moderate, vigorous intensity exercise per day. Rather, the trackers recorded and added up all their short bouts of activity, like walking up a flight of stairs or running to catch a bus, says Dr. Phillips. What did the study find? Not surprisingly, research found that moderate to vigorous activity proved most beneficial for heart health. Sitting was the worst. Next, they created statistical models to estimate what would happen if a person swapped one behavior for another. Replacing even 5 minutes of sitting with moderate to vigorous activity, like brisk walking, running, or cycling, could have a tangible effect on heart health. Of course, extending that swap time to 30 minutes is even better. As an example, they estimated the potential change in BMI from doing moderate to vigorous activity instead of 30 minutes daily of each of the four other activities. Routinely replacing light activity with moderate activity could nudge down the BMI by 0.15 points. Swapping standing or sleeping with moderate activity could lower BMI by 0.4 and 0.43 points, respectively. But replacing sitting with moderate activity could lower the BMI by 0.63 points. While added longer, more intense bouts of exercise can reap greater rewards, even small, modest changes can make a difference. Replacing sitting with standing led to positive changes across all the health parameters. I tell my patients to take any opportunity to add more movement into their day, or even just standing instead of sitting all day. While the model suggests that even sleeping is better than sitting, when it comes to heart health, it's not quite that simple. For example, indirect factors that lead to weight gain, like snacking while watching television, may explain why sitting appears worse than sleeping. In addition, there's good evidence linking sleep deprivation with poor metabolic health. When you're tired, you're less likely to exercise and won't eat as healthfully, and you feel more stressed, says Dr. Phillips. So if you're sleep deprived, that is, you routinely get less than 6 hours of sleep per night, you should prioritize getting at least 7 hours of shut-eye every night rather than doing more exercise. One simple trick to make sure you get up out of your chair regularly is to fill up a water bottle and drink it throughout the day so you'll have to get up to use the bathroom. Another helpful habit is to take a short stroll after lunch or dinner. Using the large muscles in your legs helps absorb the glucose load from the meal, which helps regulate your blood sugar and insulin levels. A fitness band or smartwatch can help you keep tabs on your daily activity, including how much you exercise and sleep. Some models include default reminders to stand up at least once an hour for at least 12 hours per day. But don't feel you have to get one of these devices, says Dr. Phillips. A smartphone, which nearly everyone has these days, does a fine job of tracking your daily steps, provided you remember to carry it with you most of the day. If you take about 500 steps during a 5-minute walk, that counts as brisk walking. Don't worry if you have a slower pace. Just get out of your chair and get moving as much and as often as you can. Now here's a brief article, which is entitled, A vegan diet may be better for heart health than an omnivore diet. Twins who ate a vegan diet for 2 months had better cardiometabolic health than their identical siblings who ate an omnivorous diet. The study in the November 2023 issue of JAMA Network Open included 22 pairs of identical twins. One twin from each pair was assigned a vegan diet, and the other an omnivore diet. Both diets contained fruits, vegetables, beans, and whole grains. While the omnivore diet included animal-based foods like chicken, fish, and dairy products, the vegan diet excluded those foods and was entirely plant-based. At the end of the study, participants following the vegan diets had LDL cholesterol levels that were 13.9 points lower than those on the omnivore diet. The vegans also had significantly lower insulin levels and lost an average of 4.2 pounds compared to the omnivores. The findings support what many earlier studies have shown. Plant-based diets help to improve heart health. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.